Call the meeting to order. First bill up, and we don't quite have a quorum. We will shortly. As Representative Huntley's House File 305, this is a bill relating to health, establish Freedom to Breathe Act of 2007. Representative Huntley, as soon as we get a quorum, I'll move your bill. But perhaps you could start to introduce the bill and provide, or we'll begin the testimony. We've allotted a couple minutes for an introduction, 30 minutes on behalf of the proponents, 30 minutes or 35 minutes for opponents, and then a couple minutes for you to wrap up at the end.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is the Freedom to Breathe Act. What it does is basically outlaw smoking in any place where there are workers present. The big impact is on restaurants, bars, and public transportation kinds of vehicles. Smoking would be banned by this bill statewide, and I'm sure most of you know the details of this, but let me begin by just explaining a little bit about who Tom Huntley is. And I'm a scientist. I've taught in medical schools for two different medical schools since 1971. I've spent most of my life looking at science. I've also served on the Duluth City Council, so I know a little bit about local government affairs and how what the impacts can be. We've had this bill in the Healthcare Committee. It's quite clear that the cost of smoking in Minnesota exceeds $2 billion in terms of cost to the healthcare system and cost to lost productivity. And my number one reason for doing this is I think it's a workers' safety issue. We need to protect workers from hazardous substances or hazardous occasions in their workforce. Again, in the we just had the Health Committee meeting about helping nurses that work in nursing homes from not having back injuries when they have to lift patients. We're doing that for nurses. Why don't we do it for waitresses and bartenders to protect them in their workplace? Again, back to sort of my beginning in the early 70s, I actually published a paper on the effect of smoking mothers and the impact that had on their fetuses. And what I was looking at was a particular enzyme, if you folks know what an enzyme is, that's supposed to detoxify nasty compounds that come into our body so we can get rid of them. The trouble with this particular enzyme was what the body tries to do when they get these very sticky kinds of molecules that are present in smoke. They're very hard to excrete because they're not very water-soluble, so what the body does is develop enzymes that can put hydroxyl groups on them to make them more soluble in water so you can excrete them. The trouble with one of these enzymes, when they get the kind of compounds that come in tobacco smoke, when they put a hydroxyl compound on them, they actually make them more carcinogenic than they were before. And I looked at the level of this enzyme in the placentas of newborn kids that came from mothers that smoked versus those that came from mothers that didn't smoke, and there was a tenfold increase in the amount of this enzyme in the placenta. And if you don't understand the anatomy of the placenta, it's part of the fetus. So the mother smoking had a direct impact on that baby in her uterus. That is not secondhand smoke, but we heard testimony in the Health Committee that there's very little difference between secondhand smoke and direct smoke. We're hearing a lot of criticism of the Surgeon General's report that came out in 2006 that says there's no safe level of secondhand smoke. And if you went back to 1964 when the first Surgeon General's report on smoking came out, that this was smoking, not secondhand smoke, all the arguments that we're hearing today against the 2006 Surgeon General's reports are the same arguments that were there in 1964. they're identical. All it really doesn't cause it, there's not enough scientific evidence, you know, and basically the Surgeon General's report was quite clear in 1964 and is quite clear in 2006. From my local government background, I mean, I've looked at the economics, and when Duluth passed its own restaurant smoke-free ban, there was no decline in sales tax from restaurants or bars. No decline. Even though we're a border city, people can go across the bridge and eat and smoke in Superior, there was no decline in revenues to the city of Duluth from restaurants and bars. And let me wrap up by saying again that I think this is a worker safety issue. It's quite clear that people that get secondhand smoke have nearly the same impacts on them as do people that directly smoke.
Thank you, Representative Huntley. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's pretty hard to follow up on that one. I think, you know, the scientific evidence that Representative Huntley has brought forward is pretty compelling, but let me just kind of drive it even a little further in. The report that we're talking about here, the Surgeon General report of 2006, in its preparation of the report says initial chapters were written by 22 experts who were selected because of their knowledge of the particular topic. The contributions of internal experts were consolidated into 10 major chapters, which were then reviewed by more than 40 peer reviewers. The entire script was then sent to more than 30 scientists and experts who reviewed it for scientific integrity. After each review cycle, the drafts were revised by scientific editors on the basis of experts' comments. This is not just something that they threw together on a lark. This is something that has had over 20 years of research, and if you take a look at the manual itself and take the time to read through it, the scientific evidence is very compelling. And the conclusions that they come to are not just, it might happen. The conclusions they come to is, it happens. So we, in this committee, in particular, in commerce, have the responsibility as policymakers to say, is the overriding factor of loss of revenue or loss of employment more important than the loss of life? And I think we need to cut down to the chase on this one. And the studies are in that says there is no significant loss of revenue over the long term. And the impacts that this has via this study are so compelling that I think the natural follow-on for us as policymakers today is to pass this bill through, get it to the floor, and get this to the state of Minnesota to create a level playing field so that all businesses are singing out the same sheet of music and everybody has an equal opportunity. And, Mr. Chair, I look forward to the debate, and I'm sure it will be a fiery one.
Thank you, Representative Severson. With that, folks, we do have a quorum. First up is approval of the minutes. Representative Anseltz moves the minutes of the February 27th meeting. Are there any comments, questions, concerns with respect to those? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries, and then at this point, Representative Huntley and Severson will formally move House File 305. We recommend it to pass. I'm going to hold off on the re-referral until we see what amendments may or may not go on, and then we'll figure out where best to send it. My understanding is we have about, at least we've been contacted previously by, I believe it's 11 or 12 folks that would desire to testify in favor, and another roughly equal number that want to testify against the bill. We're going to try to stick within about a half an hour for each side, and I would ask just out of consideration for everybody in the room as well as anybody that desires to get home before the snowstorm packs us all in. I want you to make your point, but if it's been made by a previous witness, you don't need to spend a great deal of time on it. The key is to try to make the key points make sure that we're aware of all those. With that, I will call upon Dr. Mark Manley, who's first on our list. There's no magic to this. We're just taking folks in the order that they contacted us and desired to be on the agenda. Dr. Manley, welcome to the committee. I know you've done this before, but if you can just identify who you are and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mark Manley. I'm Vice President and Medical Director for Population Health at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota. And thanks for the opportunity to talk today about the impact of the Freedom to Breathe Act on business. I'll focus my comments on the enormous and growing health care costs that businesses and premium payers and taxpayers face. And in particular, I want to focus on the impact of secondhand smoke on healthcare costs. The 2006 Surgeon General's report identifies those conditions that are caused by exposure to secondhand smoke. For adults, those conditions include lung cancer, heart attacks, and other heart disease. Every scientific organization that has examined the science of secondhand smoke has reached the same conclusion. Treating lung cancer and heart disease caused by secondhand smoke obviously costs a lot of money, but exactly how much? We asked experts in health economics and epidemiology from the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health to work with us to answer that question. And the result of that work is a brand new study, the first of its kind ever done in Minnesota, and you are the first to hear to hear these results, and I have copies of it here for you. Based on the most current data, our experts found that more than 66,000 Minnesotans are treated each year for diseases caused by secondhand smoke. The cost of treating these people with diseases caused by secondhand smoke is at least $215 million per year in Minnesota. Finally, they found that at least 580 Minnesotans die because of secondhand smoke exposure each year. That's the equivalent of entire Minnesota communities, such as Center City, Kandi Ohi, Ivanhoe, or Big Fork. These are deaths, illnesses, and health care costs that could be prevented if secondhand smoke was eliminated. I should note that this figure only includes direct medical costs. It does not include other costs that impact our economy, such as cost of long-term care or lost productivity. But still, this conservative estimate of $215 million is disturbing. We are spending far more on the medical costs caused by secondhand smoke than our state government budgets for early childhood education, transportation, and the Department of Agriculture combined, year in and year out. Mr. Chairman and members, please let me be very clear. The best reason to pass this bill is not to save money. The best reason by far to pass this bill is to save and improve human lives. But if you're going to consider the economic impact of secondhand smoke, I urge you to look at the big picture. I urge you to look beyond the anecdote and beyond one particular sector. Secondhand smoke has an economic impact on every Minnesotan. It generates costs paid by every business owner, every premium payer, and every taxpayer in Minnesota. Passing the Freedom to Breathe Act with no exemptions and no loopholes will absolutely reduce these costs. So thank you for allowing me to cover that. If I could, there's a couple of people who are going to testify following me that did not make it because of the snowstorm, and I might just say a word only about what each of them was going to say. One was Elizabeth Getz, who's a restaurant owner from St. Cloud who couldn't make it all the way down here. She wanted to make the point that smoke-free laws in restaurants protect workers, do not harm business, and she has personal experience with that. And if she was here, she would tell you in better detail. The second person who is not here today is Bill Hands, who is a Korean War veteran and came to talk about the American Legion halls that he would like to attend and cannot because of smoking, and wanted to make the point that it's good for veterans, young and old, to be in smoke-free environments as well. So thank you very much for allowing me to squeeze those in, too.
Thank you, Dr. Manley. Next up is Michael Brommelkamp. Is on the list, and Dr. Manley also raised a point about, I know that there are some folks that have had a difficult time making it here today. We've got a few inches of snow falling outside. I did note, and we've shared with the members of the committee, we sent out by email, we put up a web survey about a week ago, and folks, you know it's not scientific. It wasn't randomly selected or anything like that. Anybody that wanted to vote could vote. We posted that on the website. Just as importantly, we took comments and have shared all those comments with members of the committee, but got over 15,000 hits on that website, and I believe, Elizabeth, about 2,000 or more comments, which we printed out and are sitting at the end of the table. We also forwarded those to members of the committee. And somewhat for the purposes, it's hard to get to the Capitol for some folks, so it was a nice opportunity for people to weigh in if they chose to. I know other people took the opportunity to weigh in directly by sending emails directly to members and making phone calls, and we appreciate that as well. With that, Mr. Brommelkamp.
Thank you, Chair Atkins and members of the committee. Thanks for having me here this afternoon. Hope you're all enjoying the snow. I understand that you've all been given a copy of the research report that I'll be talking about. My name is Mike Grummelkamp. I'm a CPA with Olson Thielen here in St. Paul, and I am the co-author, along with Dan Stoltz, of a research study whose primary aim is to measure the direct aggregate economic impact of various smoke-free ordinances that were implemented throughout the state of Minnesota in 2004 and 2005. To cut to the chase, the study concludes that there was no apparent economic impact on the local economies examined in this report or on the state of Minnesota as a whole. We noted that hospitality industry aggregate sales remained consistent with long-term trends after the ordinances were implemented, and that the number of hospitality venues actually increased during 2005 in communities where these ordinances were implemented and data was available. The study reviewed economic data from 1994 to 2005 in seven jurisdictions where smoke-free ordinances were implemented, as well as the state of Minnesota as a whole. Those jurisdictions were Beltrami, Hennepin and Ramsey counties, and the cities of Bloomington, Golden Valley, Minneapolis, and Moorhead. This study measures the direct aggregate economic impact by analyzing changes in relationships among four key statistics within those areas. Those four key statistics are aggregate sales from eating and drinking establishments, population, numbers of employees, and number of establishments. The study's aim is to take a long-term perspective of the aggregate economic effects of the smoke-free ordinances. It is not intended to magnify short-term impacts or draw premature inferences from incomplete or insufficient data. It is also not intended to serve as a forecasting tool. It is an independent perspective of the aggregate economic effects of the smoke-free ordinances. Most importantly, the data speaks for itself. Now, ideally, as a researcher, I would say it's helpful to look at 2 or 3 years of data of following the implementation of the ordinances to monitor the trends over time. However, the historical data that's been accumulated and plotted graphically from 2000 through 2005 provides a strong foundation for interim analysis. We believe that the economic impact study is credible because of four reasons. We obtained objective data from independent sources. Those data sources include the Minnesota Department of Revenue, the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development, the Department of Administration's Demographic Center, and the U.S. Department of Labor Bureau of Labor Statistics. We used data points after the laws were implemented and for several years before, and we went back as far as 1994 to establish trends. We used methods that control for trends and fluctuations. The data is adjusted for inflation and changes in populations, and you'll note that on the graphs, we used trend lines to aid the readers in viewing the data. Revenues were adjusted for inflation using the Consumer Price Index. I'd reiterate that the study concludes that there was no apparent economic impact on the local economy studied, that hospitality industry aggregate sales did remain consistent with the long-term trends after the ordinances were implemented, and that the number of venues increased during 2005 in each of the communities where the ordinances were implemented. I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today, and I'm certainly available for any questions concerning the study.
Thank you, Mr. Grummelkamp. But I think we're going to hold off on questions for now until we get through all the testimony. Ms. Beckman. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kristen Beckman, and I work for the 28,000 Service Employees International Union members that live here in Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity to participate in a debate on what I consider to be about healthcare costs and the impact on business and labor. It's becoming clear that for business to remain competitive and workers to sustain their livelihoods, we need to do something about the crushing costs of healthcare. When the CEO of General Motors, stands up and says that there are $1,400 worth of healthcare costs on every car produced in America, and that that's keeping GM from being competitive in the global marketplace, we need to do something about the cost of healthcare. And that would be for the good of all businesses. The bill before you today does just that. It contributes to the effort to make healthcare costs more affordable. As Dr. Manley testified earlier, Blue Cross Blue Shield did the report showing that in 2002, $1.9 billion just in Minnesota was spent on treating smoking-related disease and illness. Now, research shows that if states pass comprehensive smoking ordinances, not only does it reduce the exposure to secondhand smoke, but it reduces tobacco use, which in turn decreases smoking-related illnesses, deaths, and disease, and then the cost that is borne by the community to treat those. Now, I understand there are individual businesses that are very concerned about the impact of this ordinance on their business, but I hope that this committee will think about all businesses and their struggle to afford health care right now. We need to lower health care costs and that so the businesses can be competitive, and we can do that by lowering the cost of treating smoking-related illness and disease. And we can do that by passing an ordinance that prohibits smoking in bars, restaurants, and private clubs. Now, while I urge you to think about all business in making your decision, I also ask you to think about all workers as you are considering how you're going to vote today. The science of secondhand smoke is clear. It is very dangerous to work in a workplace where secondhand smoke is regularly seen, and there's no amount of ventilation that can remove the toxins from the air. A worker in a bar is no different than a worker in a restaurant or a private club. This is a workplace safety issue. All of these service workers deserve the protection that only comes from air free of smoke, not air ventilated from smoke. So as you vote, I ask you to think about all businesses and their struggle with the cost of health care, and I ask you to think about all workers and their right to work free from the dangers of secondhand smoke. Please vote for a comprehensive law that does not exempt any bars, restaurants, or different workplaces. Together, we could do something about health care costs. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Beckman. Next on the list, Dr. John Venetta. Dr. Venetta available? And, Doctor, this isn't directed necessarily at you, but at the pace we're going, we're not going to keep within the 30 minutes, so I'd appreciate it if you could. Thank you very much.
I came down from Duluth, and I made it. So I think I can help you.
5 hours.
The first thing I would ask all the committee members is, please, when you get back to your district, would you go with your local physician to see the impact of smoking on his practice or her practice? Let me give you an example. Last Monday night, I was in call in Duluth, Minnesota. I'm a general internist, and I got a call from Hibbing, Minnesota, about a lady who was very confused, and we had seen in the past. And I asked her, they wanted to send her down. I said, great, let's send her down. So she comes down to the emergency room, and she's clearly having trouble with her ability to think. So we worked her up, and she had two areas in her brain that were clearly malignant. We also looked at her chest x-ray, and in fact, that's where the primary was. Now, when a physician sees a patient and does a history and physical, you ask various things, and one of the things I asked is, do you smoke? And she said, I never have. I said, really? She said, both my parents did, and I was a waitress at a bar. Now, I'm sitting there thinking, here's a nice lady that's 52 years old who did not take a direct move to cause her malignancy. And yet her family's going to suffer the loss of a mother, the loss of a wife, and the loss of a good waitress. And that's because Minnesota doesn't have a clean smoking, or Clean Air Act. Now, if I went to a bar, and I do go to bars on occasion, I don't go to ones where they smoke, but if I ask for a gin and tonic and they dump some mud in there, I probably want to drink it. And I suspect none of you would. And if you go to the local bar and everyone's lighting up, how is that any different? So I would ask you, from the bottom of my heart, for those patients that I see that have chronic asthma, chronic lung disease, lung malignancy like this lady, please, gentlemen, ladies, let's help the Minnesotans have clean air to prevent this sort of disease. I hope that's quick enough. And is there anything else you want to ask? And roads are terrible up north. They closed the roof. I don't feel aware of that.
And, Doctor, we appreciate you coming
out.
We wish you a safe trip home as well.
Thank you.
Next up is Bruce Nelson. Mr. Nelson, available?
10 years ago.
Mr. Nelson, welcome to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bruce Nelson. I'm a registered mechanical professional engineer in Minnesota. I'm also a member of the American Society for Heating, Refrigerating, and Air Conditioning Engineers, ASHRAE, that you may have heard that term, as an organization in the United States and in Canada and other countries throughout the world that has set standards for ventilation mechanical systems for many decades. And my point I want to make is that the bill that's before you is doing the right thing, and doing the right thing as far as the members of ASHRAE are concerned. Over the past 15 years or so, ASHRAE members worked very diligently to try to come up with a solution to tobacco smoking in buildings and to try to identify an acceptable level of ventilation and indoor air quality that would allow smoking in buildings. And in fact, they did publish a standard, adopted a standard based on acceptable or that provided what was called at that time acceptable level of smoking in buildings based on odor, an acceptable level of odor. Well, in a very rare move, ASHRAE, a couple of years later, withdrew that standard and said that they did not accept it because the odor was not a measure of safe level of ventilation in building. So, as incorporated into the current state building code, the ASHRAE standards do not attempt to either address or achieve safe levels of tobacco smoke. Manufacturers of air purifying equipment are similarly aware of this issue. One of the manufacturers on their website indicates that this product disclaims all warranties that anyone, smoker or non-smoker, who installs our air purifiers as an alternative to seeking a smoke-free environment will be protected from the health risks caused by exposure to secondhand smoke. So I recommend that the bill before you is the right thing to do to provide a smoke-free environment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Next up is Sandy. I believe it's Beach. Welcome to the committee.
Hi. Just to make things quicker, yesterday I went up to the office and handed this out. Did people get copies?
We did.
Okay, then
and
I don't have to.
And I'd appreciate it if you just, for the record, so that when the tape is listened to, if you could identify who you are.
Okay, my name is Sandy Beich. Okay. I just have to make a couple points. I've been sitting through these meetings, and I wanted to say a couple of things before the anti-ban people speak. They talk of property rights, and there's no such a thing as an absolute property right. I have a condo downtown here, and they tell me I can't hang curtains or window treatments other than a white or a clear color facing the outside. So, I mean, you can't drive a car without a muffler. There's no such thing as absolute property rights. As to personal rights, personal rights stop at my body. I mean, this bill does not interfere with a smoker's right to smoke. Okay, they can still commit suicide by cigarette. What they can't do is commit homicide by cigarette, or at least it limits it. As to the sales, what I've given you, and that's already been spoken to here, studies have shown that around the country there's been no decrease in sales when bans have gone into effect. And there are some reprints I gave you from the Pioneer Press that indicate that locally there has been no decreases in sales. Oh, thank you. And there's also a study which I indicated from California that shows when the ban first went into effect, 44% of the smokers disagreed with the ban. Okay, several years later, the same study showed that only 24% what? Okay. The latter rising from 24 to 44% in favor of a smoking ban amongst smokers who went to bars. Okay, so this indicates that there may be an attitudinal change with time, and any kind of decrease you might have in sales would not be permanent. And I wanted to address something about the ventilation issue. One thing that you should indicate, that I'd like to indicate, is that this society, their members have a lot of money to make if they could design a system that would take care of the smoke. And this is a Commerce Committee. I mean, I don't know of any business that would give up the ability to make some money. The fact that they are in favor of this ban strongly indicates that there really is no system that can do that. And just as closing words, I'd just like to say that, you know, all of you people enjoy a non-smoking environment here, and you're no better than the people that work in the service industry, and, you know, you should extend those same health benefits to those people as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Veitch. Next up is Juanita Feline, and then Flo Graham. After that, is Ms. Feline available? Welcome to the committee. And I believe you've submitted some written comments as well, and we'll make sure.
That's right. Hello?
Now, if anybody's going to actually hear you, though, you've got to sit down there and talk into that microphone. So.
That makes sense.
And just if you...
I'm a little nervous because the traffic was...
Well, we make people nervous, too, so...
No, you won't make me nervous.
Welcome to the committee. By the way, at the rate we're going, we have about 6 minutes left for six more people to testify.
Okay, I'll...
And I'm not going to cut you off, but I just want to try to keep folks sort of in the know in terms of how much time we have.
Okay. First of all, my name is Juanita Feline. I work at the VFW in Richfield, Minnesota, the 5555 Club. Worked there for about 15 years. Have also worked at the Rosemont Legion Club and the 550 Legion Club. Flo Graham isn't here. Her mother-in-law died and wasn't able to come. She's worked there 35 years. So between the two of us, we have over 50 years of time in these clubs. First of all, I'm going to say I like the people that I work with. I like working for the clubs. But what I don't like is the smoke. It is terrible. It's terrible for the workers. It permeates your clothes, your hair, the furniture, the floor, the carpeting, everything. And I know these clubs were set up at a time when smoking wasn't known to be such a pollutant and such a poisonous, dangerous substance. But a lot of the people that, at that time, when it was set up, are deceased. We're looking at World War II. And a lot of these people are either deceased or in nursing homes. So they really aren't the club members as such. A lot of our members, or people that actually come in, are just people that are local people that enjoy socializing. And I don't begrudge them the socializing at all. Except at our particular club, the bar is smack in the middle, the dining room is on one side, the party rooms are on the opposite side, and the smoke permeates in all directions. I've asked, can we at least have a door to separate the dining room from the bar? And it's fallen on deaf ears. We don't have and it's a newer club. It's only 5 years old, going on 6 years. And the filtration system obviously isn't very good because the customers complain, and that's why we took a survey and said, what do you think? And that was what we got from the few people that we talked to. And these are customers that come into the dining room. Now, the dining room customers may be different than the bar clientele. And I can see where we had it for 8 months where there was no smoking, and then they got it back in. And I could see where the playing field was different at that time because there was clubs in Savage and other areas where they could go to, the smokers. And that's where they went. So our business went down. But it's a level playing field if it's banned. Then everybody's on the same page. The clubs are all on the same page. And what will happen, as I see it, especially if the ban happens this summer, is it's going to go down for a little while, a couple of months. You're going to have people complaining and moaning. But what they'll do is come back, and then what they actually do is provide them a place outside to smoke. They've got a couple of benches out there, and they go out and socialize outside and complain a little bit, and you'll find that the business will bounce back, and especially since it will be banned statewide. And it has to be. It's a poison. It's permeating throughout the whole building, and all these old people that come in that are our clients, which we really enjoy, some of them are on oxygen. Their eyes run. They say, we don't want to come because we can't stand the smoke. We have a dance every Saturday night. And a lot of people on that list are dancers. And these people are in their 50s to 93. That's our oldest person. They come because they want to socialize, too. They want to enjoy the club. A lot of them were in the service. And why shouldn't they have the right, just as well as the smokers, to use the club and to enjoy it, but in a smoke-free environment? They should be allowed to do that just as well as the smokers that tell us we need to smoke and it's our right. And by the same token, the club members that quit smoking because they learned it's dangerous, why shouldn't they have the right to come in and enjoy their club? It works both ways. You'll hear these people, well, we'll lose money. We should be able to do what we want. And fine. If they need to do what they want, then let them get together, build a club specifically for smokers, and then anybody that works there has to sign a waiver that they know that it's a smoking club and that it's bad for their health, but they're not going to have any of the consequences from listening and hearing the things that happen when you smoke. And another thing, you're talking about wages and monies and such when you're talking about the smoking. Think of all the money that's spent on people with health problems because of the smoking. People that work at the clubs, people that have been coming to those clubs, not only that area. That's another thing that happens that we don't even address when we're talking about this ban. There's health issues that somebody's got to pay for, and it's us, the taxpayers. We're going to have to pay for that.
Ms. Feline, remember when I said I wasn't going to cut you off?
I'm talking too much. Well, I'm sorry. Well, I'm passionate about this. I'm a non-smoker.
Could I cut you off? I was just going to say that
I'm a non-smoker, and I just think it's great that you have this whole idea of banning it because it's not healthy for any of us. We all know it. So let's get with it, and let's make it a reality that it's banned. Simple as that. That's my thought.
All right.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you, and thank you for coming in today. And if you'll please pass our condolences along to Ms. Graham. We missed her here. But her comments and the petition was received, and all of the members have a copy of it as well.
Thank you,
sir. Thank you. Next up, I believe, is Steve Pollard and then Jim Ryland. Welcome to the committee. There's actually no time left, but we're going to hear from you because we know you've got important stuff to share with us. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. The members of the committee, if you'll forgive me, I'm nervous because I've never done it before. I tried to prepare. I'm speaking against the statute as presently proposed. I'm speaking on my own behalf only as a citizen. I live in Stillwater, Minnesota. And if I've said somebody or I say something not to their liking, if that person would think about what I said and then approach me, I'd be happy to listen to any cogent arguments. I'm not unreasonable, I don't believe. I'm speaking specifically with respect to the fact that this particular bill at this particular time has no exemptions for private clubs such as American Legion Post 48, of which I'm a member in Stillwater. I've heard several people speak on behalf of other Legion clubs, and it's interesting that I did not hear them say that, other than a co-worker, they have, and the one particular member, a consensus within that club that they would like to go no smoking. In my post, as was indicated earlier, there are members who are World War II veterans who were given free cigarettes when they joined the service, and they became addicted. And I can't say that I'm in favor of smoking or secondhand smoke. I watched my mother in her 80s die of emphysema, having smoked for 65 years, and I know it's a terrible thing to do. I smoked when I was in the Navy from 69 to 73, and I don't recommend it. I don't know of any smoker who suggests it's a good idea. I don't know of any smoker who suggests secondhand smoke is a good idea. But without an exemption for private clubs, I'm firmly of the belief that Post 48, for instance, will close within 3 years or less as a result of a lack of revenues for pull tabs and drinks. And there's a significant amount of those older gentlemen, Korea vets, World War II vets, who will not have a place to socialize such as they have today. That club represents a major part of their life and lifestyle, and their lifestyle and quality of life will just be severely diminished. And I don't want to see that, because this is a fine group of gentlemen with whom I'm honored to be associated with. They're selfless, they have humor, and they've seen tougher times than I know I ever will. And there's that. I have a particular problem with the way the law is presently structured, because it suggests that a temporary vertical object consists of a wall. You could raise a tarp between two sticks, and it becomes a wall by definition according to this bill. And a Boy Scout or a Girl Scout at camp will tell you that's the definition of a lean-to, and it's embarrassing. I don't know how the respective members of the committee are going to vote, and I kind of suspect from the lead-in that I got while I was sitting up in the peanut gallery that people's minds are pretty much made up, and I'll just make my point and try and move on. The kind of language that makes a vertical tarp or wall lends credence to conservatives that argue that liberals would be social engineers, and I find it extremely frustrating and embarrassing. From the overview that I pulled off of the internet, for which I thank the House for posting, we have lists of examples such as warehouses, restaurants, theaters, employee cafeterias, hallways, and so on, as part of the areas being considered. And I believe the law says that these are examples to include but is not limited to. And I hear that to say that's every place. Every place is an awful big space where tobacco products are legal. And I find that somewhat incongruous. Just not reasonable on its face, in my opinion. It includes, for work purposes, vehicles when more than one person is present. And that's unreasonable on its face if both of those people or all of the people in that particular vehicle are smokers. I understand that your clothing and the vehicle would come with smoke, and that might be a different issue, but nonetheless. It includes areas where work is performed in a private residence during business hours of operation. And I heard a gentleman suggest that the property rights end at the edge of my body. I am respectfully going to disagree with that. A good term for the office, if they would like to add to that portion of the statute that suggests that tobaccos or plant products intended for inhalation replace the term smoking equipment, that they use or include the words by the product seller, intended to be smoked for inhalation by the product seller, because I know people who are so unreasonable that they will actually light up a cigarette with no intent to smoke it and walk down the street just to irritate people. It's unfortunate some people are that way, but there you are. Public transportation and allowing taxi drivers when they do not have a client in the vehicle to smoke is a frustration when I look in light of business vehicles generally. They seem to conflict to me personally, but perhaps I don't understand legalese as well as I should in order to comment on it. So it's with great restraint I do not ask about tandem bicycles.
And Mr. Pollard, it's a great restraint that I'm trying to move folks along, and I hate to cut people off, but maybe you could sum up.
I guess I'll just finish with saying that the Freedom to Breathe Act seems like something of a misnomer to the extent that you're denying somebody the use of a legal product and then saying that it's freedom. Having said that, I think the honest thing to do would be not to call it a Freedom to Breathe Act, but something like, if the case is to be made that it's for employee safety, call it an Employee Safety Act. But that's just a personal bias of mine with respect to how the language is used. And the only other thing that I would ask, with all due respect, if you could have a roll call vote so that I might know who voted how at the end of this process, I'd be most grateful. A voice vote doesn't help me very much in my future decisions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pollard. We appreciate you coming in. Mr. Ryland? Thank you for coming in as well. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representatives. I'm very happy to be here. I had to drive through 20 miles an hour to get here, but I'm going to try and make this as short as I can. I got two pages, but I'll never finish it. My name is Jim Ryland? Okay. Anyway, I was a vet for 2 years, and I was 2 years of reserves. I was in the medical corps. I could not smoke in my barracks. I could not smoke in the mess hall. I could not smoke any place near the clinic or the hospital. If something is so dangerous, why are we doing this? I see all you guys here at the Capco, you don't have any cigarettes. What's wrong with us? We should be able to do this too. So I say, if the Army can do this, why can't we? I'm getting tired of this. Just breathing all this new smoke. I was at the Veterans Club. I joined several of them, and I just had to leave. My clothes were so smoking. Oh, we got venting systems. The venting systems didn't work. The people that were smoking over here at the bar came over where I was dancing, and they sat there, and the smoke was just clouded, even though they didn't have a cigarette in their hand. I couldn't understand how we can do this to people. And I go home, my clothes all had to be thrown on the side. I couldn't even bring them in the house. My hair was smelled, so I had to wash them again before I went to bed. I just don't understand what's going on here. Minnesota used to be so wonderful. It used to be ahead of everybody. We've fallen way behind. I'm getting tired of it. And I find out in these bars, in the VA and that, where the VFW, you go in there, all along the edges, all the bars are burnt. Who pays for this? I asked somebody at the motel one time, who's paying for this? And the motel owner says, you're paying for it. He says, I got to take it off my taxes. Is this fair to the rest of us, non-smokers? No way. I disagree with this altogether. I'm tired of paying for somebody else's smoking. 17% of my house tax insurance is because of smokers. Why should I pay for it? There's no reason for it. It's outrageous. Let the guy that smokes, if he want to pay 100% tax on his insurance, let him go ahead. In California, I've been in California and Florida. Those businesses there, I've talked to many owners, California and Florida, and they said they have never lost any business. For the first 2 weeks they did, and after that they've gained. They got ahead. They said their places are so crowded, they don't know where to set the people. What's wrong with Minnesota? We got to start taking care of it. I don't know where to start with me. After 42 years where I worked, they allowed smoking. And the smokers were so adamant, there was only 12% out of 200 to 300 people that worked there. They only had 12% that smoked. They had more rights. They got to go taking breaks. That I could never take breaks. I just don't understand what's going on with Minnesota. We got to start waking up. The law has got to start changing.
Mr. Ryland?
Yes.
Can we try to wrap up? I don't want to cut you off, but if you could kind of conclude.
I'll go out with a guy threatened me to burn my vehicle down at work even because we were talking against smoking. If you think it's wrong, I got the police reports on it and some witnesses. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ryland. And first up on the side for opponents of this legislation is Charles Sinkler. Mr. Sinkler, welcome to the committee.
Chair Atkins. Representatives, thank you for the opportunity. I usually end up preparing a whole deal for to speak, and I'm not going to today. I want to speak to two points. One is the fact that whether somebody wants to burn somebody's car or somebody wants to quote out of Surgeon General's report, the fact is that the giant monies generated by the cigarette tax settlements for the states all across the country have created an industry in itself. I mean, these people, my group here, we're volunteers. We don't get paid anything. We come trying to support our businesses and survive in our businesses. Most of the people here representing the anti-tobacco work for nonprofit associations that all feed off this giant impact slush fund that was wrangled out of tobacco by Cerise. And that's okay. Tobacco should pay. They've done a lot of probably underhanded things. I'm not part of big tobacco. I've never talked to a big tobacco person. I'm fighting for my business, and I should introduce myself, Charles Sinkler, Fabulous Ferns Bar and Grill. We've been there 16 years. We've had a 3-5% increase in growth every year since we've been opened up until last year. Last year when St. Paul did their strict smoking ban, we dropped 14%, and we have not recovered a percentage point from that, and I don't think we will. But again, the two points are, one, We fight in our little industry made up of small businessmen. We're fighting a giant, well-funded, well-organized public relations campaign against tobacco, and we're not part of that fight. We have statistics. You sit here and listen to the proponents of the bill. $2 billion in health costs to the state, $1.8 million to health costs to the state. I can go on the internet. I get a report from the Minnesota Department of Health that the health costs to the state of Minnesota are $299 million. It's a lot of money, but it's not $2 billion. I would state that most of the statistics and most of the reports and most everything presented by the anti-tobacco lobby are in fact exaggerations or just in fact made up. I'm so tired of hearing the Attorney General Carmona's 2006 final word on secondhand smoke, which is a regurgitation of the 1994, which is in fact a regurgitation of the 1986 report. Richard Carmona delivers his report and 11 days after he leaves his report, he retires from his position and goes and works with Mel Zuckerman at his plush health resorts. Carmona is a President Bush appointee. He's a fellow that joined the service as an enlisted man, came out an officer. He's a very opportunist guy and has moved on to greener pastures in the healthcare industry, but in the high end of it, and has left us to suffer under this report. I hear reports still on Helena, Montana, 40% reduction in heart attacks. Anybody with any common sense at all knows a six-month study in a town makes anybody with any background in any kind of scientific study knows it's ridiculous. A smoker inhales the cigarette smoke, 85% of it stays in his lungs, 15% is transferred out into the atmosphere. There's ventilation systems that without a doubt will filter 95% of that. There's no ventilation system that'll filter 100%, and that's what the anti-smoking lobby demands. If you can't guarantee 100%, you don't count. Well, 95% filtration of the 15% that comes out of a smoker's lungs is plenty close enough when you weigh the other side, what it does to our industry. So I'm going to speak to that for just a second.
Mr. Sinclair, if I might, I know you're a very gracious fellow because I know the business that you're in. We have another 11 people.
Okay.
And between you and Mr. Pollard, you've left about 20 minutes for those 11.
So I'm just saying that there's reports that it doesn't harm the business. I know I'm down 14%. I know Mike Costello at Costello's across the street from me is down 28%. I know Mike Fish at the his little bar in downtown St. Paul's down 43%. I mean, I talked to six people in the industry yesterday, and all of them are down, and all of them are going out of business. Aggregate is the key word. Their statistics are all based on the aggregate. They're all based on food sales. They count every McDonald's, every Burger King, every hot dog sold out of a Holiday gas station. That's the aggregate. It's the total sales. One last point. Everybody talks about the great success of the state of California. Been non-smoking since 1998, I think. Right on Robert Wood Johnson Foundation's website, I took it off yesterday, $1.8 million in grants to three different organizations in the state of California to educate bar and restaurant owners about the benefits of smoke-free legislation. 8 years later, Robert Wood Johnson Foundation is still spending $1.8 million trying to convince the hospitality industry of California that it's a good thing for them. It's not a good thing for them. It's not a good thing for Minnesota. It's not a good thing for tourism, convention trade, or our economy. I think smoking is bad, but I'm telling you, the anti-smoking and the Freedom to Breathe Act is flawed. It doesn't stop smoking, and it only hurts our state and our economy. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sackler. We appreciate your comments. I've got Colin Meinhardt. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Meinhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. I'm Colin Meinhardt, owner of the Main Street Grill in Alden, Minnesota, population 690, and a past president of the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association. My wife, Sue, wasn't able to make it today because she's a little snowed in southern Minnesota, but I made it up here. We are truly mom-and-pop business operators, and we fear losing our business and livelihood that allows us to send our son and our daughter this fall to the University of Minnesota. We also fear losing the opportunity to sell our business and enjoy retirement in Minnesota someday. I do not represent any tobacco companies or tobacco interests. I don't even sell cigarettes in my business, but I do gladly welcome adult customers who choose to smoke. I have not consulted with tobacco interests or their representatives. The MLBA is free from any influence by the tobacco industry. I am here today simply representing the hundreds of small family business owners that operate in this great state of Minnesota. I hope the state representatives from greater Minnesota understand the fears that face small business owners throughout Minnesota. At this time, we do not need an all-out smoking ban. What we need is time. Time to plan, whether it's an exit strategy plan or a plan to change our businesses to accommodate a smoking ban. We need time. My business operates in a 7 to 10% profit margin, so you can see that a loss of smoking customers could destroy my business. I say this again without concern for the profits of tobacco companies. What I do care about is my business in Fremont County, a county with a shrinking population base, an Iowa casino 2 miles south on Interstate 35, and nothing on the horizon to turn it around. Small businesses throughout the state each face a different obstacle to stay profitable facing an all-out smoking ban. I think Johnny Cash said it best. I see the train a-coming, coming around the bend. Colin Meinhardt sees the train coming too. Please give us some time. Let's debate some compromises. Let's move Minnesota forward without creating collateral damage to charities that depend on income from pull tab sales, loss of full and part-time jobs to bartenders and wait staff, and the loss of family livelihoods and dreams that made Minnesota a great place to live. It's a tough issue, and it's a tough vote for some of you. Representatives, it's time for some intestinal fortitude. Be a champion for small businesses in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meinhardt. Next up on my list is Brian Turtle.
Well, Mr. Chair, if the committee would allow, I would testify for Mr. Turtle because he was unable to make it here.
Okay, well, I would say just about anybody else but you, but I guess if we got to have you. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, this is a constituent of mine. I would ask you to treat him with respect you respect to me.
I just did. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Farrell.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Jim Farrell. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota License Beverage Association. We have approximately 2,000 members statewide. And if I grimace, it's not appearing in front of this committee. It's actually nice. But I thought I'd play hockey last night like Joe Bagnoli, and unfortunately I have 3 cracked ribs now. The thing that I'd like to stress for you is that when you think about this issue from a business standpoint, we look at it that there's 4 types of businesses. One, there's a restaurant, which could be Embers or a place similar, and the smoking bans have had very little impact, if none, to those establishments. In fact, I can tell you that in St. Paul, when we had a partial ban, no restaurant closed because of the smoking ban. 2, we have nightclubs, places like Gabby's in northeast Minneapolis, where they witnessed their clientele base go to Anoka County. So the patchwork of the smoking ban in the Twin Cities has had a major impact to establishments where there is a young crowd. And there is some that believe that if there was a level playing field for those folks, that they would survive. I can't tell you because we haven't been able to witness that. The theory being is that young people will go out no matter what. The third group, the supper club type group, that would be like Mancini's. And they have seen a loss on their bar side, which is used to help subsidize their food sales. We run the pull tab operation on the bar in Mancini's, And in 1 month, the sales went down two-thirds, 66%. And it was because of the smoking ban. The problem is that Mr. Mancini, Pat, and John now have to compete with national food chains that are able to buy their steaks, like Outback, at reduced costs, and they have large purchases, where the Mancini family does not have that. And so the bar has always helped subsidize to keep those steak sales down. The last and final group are your basic little tavern. For those of you from the suburbs, Representative Anderson, I looked up, there's not too many of this kind of establishment out there in Plymouth. But, for example, on the east side of St. Paul, or South St. Paul, there are the little neighborhood bars, and they've been hurt. In St. Paul, we lost eight. Now, two have tried to reopen with different owners, and we'll see what happens to them. So what I'm saying to you is that when my members are afraid, I think they have legitimate reason to be afraid if they're that small little bar. When Doc Huntley, Representative Huntley, testifies that Duluth didn't see an aggregate decrease, that's true, but keep in mind that you can smoke in bars in Duluth. For example, Grandma's on Canal Park, you can eat on the first level without smoking, and you can go upstairs and drink and have smoking. The problem is trying to find some mix that makes sense in all of this, and you are given that task. And I want you to know that the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association is more than willing to assist in that. I think you'll find our behavior during this debate. We haven't had anybody call and threaten you. We've been forthright with our information. And we truly want to be part of the discussion. And if there are discussions about giving us some ability to deal with tax issues, giving us the ability to prepare and develop an exit strategy, our past president, Mike Jennings, who owns several establishments in Hennepin County, many times over the last 3 years has said to people, "Could you know, one day I went to work and what was in my business every day was okay, and I woke up and today it's not okay. Can I have some sort of exit strategy?" And then finally, I would just let you know that the fear that my members have statewide is that it's just not going to end with indoor air. Up in Carleton County, the county passed the smoking ban ordinance. It says that you cannot smoke outside now 25 feet from an entryway or a window. Well, if you have a 10-foot ceiling, clearly you're 25 feet vertically, and you can be in a small town with one business next to another business. You're 25 feet away from another entryway. So if you're at the Lumberjack Lounge in Cloquet, the only place under the Carleton County ordinance now that you can smoke is 25 feet in the middle of your parking lot. And, you know, the question becomes is, you know, if we're going to just ban smoking, it would be maybe a little better to be more forthright about it. Because not only did they say that you had to be 25 feet away, they said that if you build any sort of patio, 50% of the seats have to be non-smoking. So it's almost like they're just piling on. And finally, you'll hear from my folks, no one is going to argue whether smoking is good or bad. But what they will argue is that they are sole proprietors, most of them, and that they only work on about a 7 to 10% margin, and they're scared to death right now. But with that fear, I've been trying to lead them in a manner that is not antagonistic, that is forthright, and that would somehow help them. And so that is our ultimate goal, is not to be right about whether smoking is good or bad, but to be able to see some victories so that they're not economically harmed. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Farrell. Next up, Mary Alla. Folks, we have about, this is my fault, not the folks that are testifying, but there's about 7 minutes left and eight people left to testify, and just if out of courtesy to the folks last or later on the list, if you can try to make your testimony as quick as possible.
Okay.
Thank you and welcome to the committee.
Hi, my name is Mary Yazla. I am the mother of six. I am the grandmother of five. I am not a political rebel, but I am gutsy. I have worked in a bar for about 35 years, and I don't suffer from a damn thing. I have, do not have emphysema. I do not have bronchitis. I don't have any of these things, nor do I know any of my coworkers do. My father owned a bar through the 50s, through the 90s, never smoked a cigarette in his life, and he never even had a hack. And now all of a sudden there's all this terror about secondhand smoke, making smokers out to be murderers, for God's sakes. So I thought, okay, all these people are dying. What's the number in Minnesota? So I called the state of Minnesota and got to the mortality rate chart. They don't have anybody in the state of Minnesota that died. They don't list it as a cause of death. There's too many other factors. It could be from your job, elsewhere. It could be fumes from at home. It could be lead paint. It could be mold. It could be other things. So if somebody has died in the state of Minnesota from secondhand smoke, it ain't listed. So then I thought, okay, they say 60,000 people in the United States have died from secondhand smoke. So I decided to call Washington, D.C., the National Center for Health Statistics. And I said, plain and simple, none of this political BS runaround, how many people have died from secondhand smoke? The lady says, can I put you on hold? Sorry, ma'am, we'll have to call you back. They don't list it. This Minnesota has OSHA. OSHA is there. They're there for worker health and safety issues. They have a free service. They can come to your business and consult any small business on how to solve a problem. And you can't tell me when they can clean up pollution at Pine Bend Refinery that they can't clean up the air in a little bar. So I'm going to cut it short. I'm really nervous. But I'm going to ask you guys, because I don't know anybody, do you know anybody that's ever died of secondhand smoke? I don't. And one last thing. This is America, not communist Cuba. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Yazza. Next up, I have King Wilson and then Marty Strub. Mr. Wilson.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is King Wilson. I'm the Executive Director of Allied Charities of Minnesota. I represent the organizations in the state that do charitable gambling. Charitable gambling, we had a handout. Hopefully you got charitable gambling is a $1.3 billion industry. Pro-tabs is the bulk of our business, and bars is where most of our business is done. And what I would like to convey to you that the bill as it's currently drafted is going to cause a significant decrease in sales of charitable gambling, which is going to mean that these 1,400 organizations in the state are going to have significantly less dollars to contribute to the worthy programs and projects that they contribute to virtually every community in the state. The pink sheet has a some information that the Gambling Control Board has put together. They've been tracking this. They're neutral on the smoking ban issue, but they have been looking, and you'll see City of St. Paul the last year, you know, 29% decrease, City of Bloomington, 21% decrease. We're guesstimating that with if a total ban were to go into effect, that we're going to probably see a 25% decrease in charitable gambling sales. The goldenrod sheet does show the sales last year in the state of Minnesota. Then below it is a projection of 25% less. Unfortunately, because our expenses cannot decrease at the same level as our sales will likely to will, it's going to roughly mean organizations are going to have about half as much money to contribute to these various programs and projects. State taxes will decrease significantly. You know, the state is the largest beneficiary of charitable gambling, over 50-some million dollars last year, over $1 billion since we started out. Then there are about, I picked out 11 sample charities. I tried to range from some large ones. The Spring Lake Park Lions Club, the third largest in the state, had over $250,000 last year. If they get a 25% decrease, that's going to get down to about a $67,000 through the programs they support in that area. We will have some expense problems. If you look at the numbers. It shows what their expenses are under current, and we have to be below 60% or we have licensing problems, and a decrease in 25% is going to see most organizations are going to jump above that 60%. If they don't have an expense carryover, these organizations are either going to have to reimburse or go out of business. We would like to see, we understand that something is likely to pass this legislative session. As we sat back and thought, what would we like to see in a bill? I think things would have been a local preemption clause so that things would have been uniform. We wouldn't have had, as Mr. Farrell said, Cloquet at 25 feet, Bloomington at 40 feet, Minneapolis at zero. I think the Ramsey County model that's been out there for a couple of years, an exemption styled after that would be a real good way. We do have a niche in our business, bingo halls. They're not bars. They're not restaurants. Approximately 70, and one hall claims to me 90% of their customers smoke. We would have liked to have seen some sort of exemption for them. We've seen the four bingo halls in St. Paul all have closed doors. We were just notified that down, we've lost another one down near the border, and I think bingo halls are going to have a real difficult struggle. I do appreciate, I know, Mr. Chair, you have thrown a bill in, along with, I believe, on this committee, Representative Zellers and Representative Simpson, to look at doing something on the tax-wise so that when we do see a decrease in sales, that maybe our bottom line won't decrease as much as 50%. If we don't have to pay as much taxes, we'll have some additional dollars, which we do appreciate. The last sheet we had was this red one. It just was an article that came up a year ago up in Canada. Ontario passed a smoking ban, and, there are folks like myself that actually said it would destroy them. I'm not going to go that far. We're going to take a significant hit. But then a year later, there was a follow-up study, and basically what it did show was that there was a 50% decrease in the profits, money they had available. Their attendance dropped 25%, and their sales dropped 27%. So I think, looking at other jurisdictions, the numbers were there. Charitable gambling groups, I think, do good things in virtually every community in the state of Minnesota. We would like to continue to do that. At least a third of our money goes towards local governments, whether it be cities, whether it be schools. So if we see decreases in our sales, we're going to have less money to give at a time when we're having record numbers of inquiries to get money from these groups. So I thank you for your time, and as you have deliberations as this afternoon, as things go on, we would like to see some compromisers and, do something so that maybe some bars could be exempted so that the charities could have the best chance to remain where they're at. One other thing, there has been some discussion about charitable gambling sales decreasing year after year, and on the back of the golden round sheet, it does show from the Gambling Control Board's annual report the last 10 years. During the last 6 years, we have indeed dropped 12% over 6 years aggregate. So when we're looking at what might be a 20-25% decrease in 1 year, and if you go back the full 10 years, we're actually only down about 3% from where we were. So, we've been on a downward trend, 4-5% a year, which is not a healthy deal, but a total smoking ban is going to send us down significantly and not allow your local groups to raise the money for the things that they support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Mr. Straub.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for giving me the time here to speak today. I work for the Sheet Metal Workers Local Union and also the Contractors Association that represents those workers. Our local covers all of Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and four or five counties in Wisconsin up around the Lake Superior area. I'm here really for two reasons. The first one is to talk about ventilation as an acceptable alternative. We've heard testimony that it doesn't work. We've heard testimony that you can't filter out everything. I will agree with that. We can filter out pretty much all of the larger particles. We cannot filter out the gases. And that's why you need ventilation. If you look at the ASHRAE study that was mentioned earlier, it talked about ventilation not working. The reason, and I believe it's an error on the part of the people that cited that study, they talked about the filtration systems not working. Again, some particulates left behind. The gases are left behind. The ventilation that occurs along with the filtration removes those gases or dilutes them significantly, so it's not a problem any longer for the people in the space. Several examples of that would be, they're very common throughout the city, throughout the entire state. Any hospital, laboratory, school with a chemistry room in it, all produce or have within their labs and areas like that, toxic chemicals and gases, and it's all mitigated with proper ventilation. We've heard comments about bars that are so smoky. I was an inspector for more than 16 years, a ventilation inspector with the city of St. Paul. Not one bar, and believe me, I looked at a lot of them, not one bar that ever inspected, and I would suspect that the same across the state, was ventilated to the ASHRAE standard for bars, or excuse me, for smoking areas. There's a separate rate, it's half of what a bar's ventilation rate is half of what the ventilation rate required for a smoking area is. When an owner looks at putting in a ventilation system before the threat of a ban, they looked at it and said, should I do it for a bar or should I do twice as much for a smoking area? It's a lot cheaper to get by for a bar. So that's the route that they took. Had they increased their ventilation, we probably wouldn't need to have this argument going on today. The second reason that I'm here is for jobs. My local union has over 200 members, commercial sheet metal workers that are unemployed. If the ventilation option was given, I'm sure we could nearly clear that bench for a good number of years while that work is going on in those establishments putting these ventilation systems in. It doesn't just affect my union. The pipe fitters, the electricians, a certain number of carpenters are all going to benefit by an exemption that would allow ventilation to occur. And I know I'm probably running over on your time here, so I'll cut it short, and I do appreciate the time to come in front of you. Thank you.
We appreciate your comments, Mr. Shrub. Thank you. For the folks, we still have a half dozen folks left, and we're about 5 minutes over for the time that, and there was actually more time allotted to the opponents for the bill. Next up is Mr. McFarland. If the point's been made by previous testifiers, frankly, you don't need to make it again, unless Mr. McFarland is available, next up after that is Ms. Jeffers. Welcome to the committee.
Hi. Thank you. Sue Jeffers, Seven Herbs, Bar and Restaurant, the Tavern League of Minnesota, Minneapolis Hospitality Association, pretty much anything that has to do with property rights and small businesses. It's so hard to sit here and listen to the other side talk because everything is so distorted. And in some cases they outright lie. And anyone with any common sense knows secondhand smoke is not mustard gas. And as much as I wish everybody was, no one is forced to work or patronize my bar. I'm going to go to you for a second because a couple of years ago he asked me if I would sign a statement to hang in my bar saying that I would allow smoking in here and accept the risks of secondhand smoke and any damage that it would cause to my employees. At the time, I didn't know as much about secondhand smoke as I do now, and the answer is yes, I would. Every study out there, every one of them, shows you have to be in an unventilated, sealed room for 21 years to even reach a risk factor as high as your cell phone, your hair dryer, or your electric blanket. So I've been waiting to tell you that for a long time. By the way, if anybody has a copy of the Republican platform, would they mail that to him too? Because we are having we're having some confusion over what the platform says about it.
Is that part of your argument,
Neil Forrest? You know, 5 years ago, Pawlenty spent a couple million bucks, I think, of the MPAT money, of the tobacco money, to solve some of our budget woes. I'm encouraging you to all spend more of it. Spend all of it. And you can also spend it on some of the small businesses to buy ventilation or to buy ventilation equipment to eliminate a health hazard that doesn't exist. But at least that way our tax dollars would be going to good work. Everybody likes to talk about those numbers. In Minneapolis, the Minneapolis business owners stopped counting job losses at 2,500 jobs. It wasn't so bad because our people, most of them, went to Anoka or Ramsey County. Once you pass a statewide ban, they have to go to North Dakota, where there's no ban. They have to go to South Dakota, where liquor licenses are exempt. They have to go to Iowa, where there's no ban. They have to go to Wisconsin, where they're talking about a ban that exempts bars. And, of course, let's not forget the casinos. There's no such thing as a level playing field. These are a lot of jobs, you guys, a lot of jobs, and people don't realize it. in the Anoka County Impact Study, which everybody calls inconclusive, it's not inconclusive to bar owners, not one single bit. Hennepin County showed a growth increase of 0.15%, which included liquor stores, which makes it deceiving already. This was the lowest percentage in the entire seven-county metro area. It compared to the metro average of 1.6, and the year before, Hennepin County had an increase of 3.5%. That compared to Anoka County with a 7.2% increase, and we showed 0.15.
Ms. Jeffers, are you almost complete?
Well, I have really good news for you, because I'm also Sheila.
Well, all right, Sheila, but there's, in addition to Sheila, and we...
You didn't know that, but I'm going to make hers really short, and I'm also Carol, too. So hopefully, I don't know if Carol got taken off today.
We've got Carol's written remarks, but okay. She wasn't scheduled to testify.
So we don't have to...
And there's still three more people in addition to you, Sheila.
Okay,
Scott
makes bad legislation, vote no on the smoking ban or attempt the bars. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate your comments, Ms. Jeffers. And Ms. Cromer. We have Mr. Thomas. William Thomas. I don't see Mr. Thomas. Martin Duffy. Or Mark Wittemont.
No.
See, you could have gone. You could have been all of those folks. But yeah. I promised... We went a little bit longer, but I think it was worth the time to hear some of the arguments on both sides. To the proponents, I apologize for giving the opponents a little bit more time than what I indicated, but the proponents are going to get the last word, because the authors, please approach once more. We'd appreciate a couple minutes worth of concluding remarks, and then we'll figure out where the committee's going to go. And Representative Huntley, you've got a pair of glasses out of the deal? Representative Huntley.
We have one more gentleman who would like to talk about ventilation for a minute. Okay.
Send him on up. As I calculated, there's still about 27 seconds left for proponents. So.
Hi, Bruce Nelson again. And this in a little bit of rebuttal, there's one gentleman that talked about that 95% of the tobacco product stays in the smoker and only 5% exhaust, and I think he forgot to mention that there's actually a fair amount of tobacco smoke comes off at the end of the cigarette as well. But that kind of assumes that there is somebody has decided that there is a safe level of tobacco smoke, and even if it's only 5% plus the amount that comes off the end of the tobacco, and nobody has done that. If the tobacco smoke gets into the ventilation system, is recirculated, gets rebreathed by the non-smokers, nobody has decided what that level is. The introduction, the mixing of tobacco into air that's rebreathed by non-smokers is a bad deal, gives a false sense of security if a lot of it is rebreathed, but not everything. The only safe level is a smoke-free environment. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Huntley and Representative Severson. Some final comments?
Mr. Chair and members, again, this is a worker safety issue. We have all sorts of laws to protect workers in their place of employment. This simply gives that same kind of protection to basically the people that work in bars and restaurants.
Thank you, Representative Huntley. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, you've heard a lot of good testimony. I think one of the overall themes in this testimony is everyone thinks smoking is bad. Even the people that are supporting the are against the smoking ban understand that smoking is bad. And so I think there's an issue here that needs to go beyond even the economic impact that we've been talking about, and that is, people feel like it's bad, some people can't quit, some people won't quit, and it needs to go beyond that to what is our behavioral pattern and what can we do to encourage people to quit that's not the issue of this bill. The issue of this bill is a public safety issue. And so I would encourage members as we go into the debate, hopefully, that consider the responsibility of us as policymakers. This is not a democracy. This is a republic. You represent a district. You represent the health of the people in that district. And to make the right policy decision and to create a level playing field across the state, which is a complete smoking ban. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you, Representative Severson. I am aware, Representative Huntley, you have the A14 amendment, apparently a non-controversial amendment, just to sort of bring the bill into the shape that you want to present it. I will move that A14 amendment, but I'd appreciate it if you would take a few minutes to explain, or just a minute or two to explain what it accomplishes.
This simply makes it clear in the language of the bill that we are abiding by federal regulations that relate to smoking in nursing homes. And a nursing home is a home, and someone has been smoking all their life. This gives them the opportunity to continue to smoke in their new home.
Okay. Representative Huntley, Representative Severson, are you aware of any objections to this amendment or any controversy with respect to it? And is there anyone in the audience that desires to be heard with respect to this? I'm not aware of it either, and I haven't heard of anybody that has any objection to it. We also tried to share it. I know Ian came up earlier and we gave it to him, but unless there's any concern about it, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none. That motion carries and puts the bill into the shape that the author desires. The next amendment that we have up, and I know this one has been chaired also with the Republicans researcher, and our folks saw it earlier as well. It's the A17 amendment that's being distributed. I'll move this amendment. It's my amendment, and I'll give a brief overview of it, and then I'd appreciate any comments that people may have. What it takes into account, obviously it wasn't just today that we've been hearing from people. We've got 2,000 comments via the internet website or whatever it was, 15,000 people that weighed in, as well as all the individual comments and phone calls that we've gotten, and then the additional commentary and testimony that we received today. And one thing that struck me was that folks were looking for some time, particularly the small buyers were looking for a little bit more time in which to try to figure out what they want to do. I think Mr. Meinhardt said that they see the train coming around the bend and see it coming, but they were looking for a little bit more additional time. What the amendment does is that it would provide that the proposal does not go into effect until the end of next year, but those that adopted it prior to that, the bars and restaurants, currently they're subject to a 2.5% alcohol tax, and there would be an incentive that if they decided to adopt the ban prior to that, they would then be relieved from that alcohol tax until January 1 of 2009. The point behind that was that we've got a lot of small bars and restaurants that have indicated this is going to cause them, and I think even the proponents have acknowledged that this may cause them a little bit of trouble for a while, and hopefully they'll come back and be able to operate again and be successful, but it would allow for some financial help through the relief from the alcohol tax for a period of time. There's also the incentive so that if they want to adopt it early, they have that ability. If they can't or won't or don't, nonetheless, it would still go into effect like the train coming around the bend that Mr. Meinhardt described at the end of next year. And it does, folks, put some skin in the game on behalf of the state. It would cost the state a little bit of money. Currently, we get about $60 million from the alcohol tax. But my understanding from the proponents and many people that I've heard from is in the long run this is going to save the state a whole bunch of money. If there's folks that aren't having problems with secondhand smoke, then the
then the state's going to save money down the road. And if that's really the case, then the state shouldn't hesitate to put a little skin in the game. At least that's my opinion. And that would mean taking a little bit less in terms of the alcohol tax, at least for a period of time. And if none of the folks take advantage of it, it doesn't cost the state a nickel. If they do take advantage of it, it could cost up to whatever that figure was. I believe it was $60 million. It would require that this bill make another stop at the Finance Committee. And I'm not averse to having it go there. This is not a Finance Committee. This is the Commerce and Labor Committee. So I would anticipate that the finance folks would want to see it, and I would welcome the chance to let them visit about it. And I'm sure that Representative Huntley and Severson would do a good job of telling them whether they believe that's the right way to go or not. With that, I'd certainly be happy to stand to questions, but I'd welcome the author's comments in terms of what they think about the amendment. Representative Huntley?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't like the tax part, to be honest. I'm somewhat sympathetic and understand the delay, because we did talk about aggregate numbers, and I think those numbers are accurate. But there are individual facilities that may be harmed by this, and they probably need some time to adapt and change their business model and get ready for this change. So while I don't favor the amendment, I certainly understand the need for some individual restaurants and bars to have some time to prepare.
Thank you, Representative Huntley. Representative Severson?
And Mr. Chair, members, I guess I see on the other side of this, you know, there's another representative that was talking to me about a possible amendment on a border town, and that one of his constituents was selling a bar. And there were two people that were vying for the bar. They basically said he was going to get $500,000, but if the smoking ban went into effect, that probably wouldn't happen. So when we're talking about seeing the train coming, it's not just the owner, it's the other people who are buying it. I don't see a delay in time having any significance, because if the people who are waiting to buy the bar are looking at a smoking ban coming down, they're not going to buy it. My input on this one would be that the individual that has the bar now has the opportunity to dive into a gold mine, because I fully believe that once they get through a certain period in this smoking ban, the business is going to go skyrocket. People are going to start coming out that have never come out before. They have ridden it through the low term, they take it into the high term, and they can sell it at a better premium price. So I would tend to oppose the delay, because I think it just sets out the inevitable.
Thank you, Representative Severson. And folks, anybody that's looking to sell your body, Representative Severson, he thinks they're a gold mine. And you better turn around. You got some hands up, Representative Severson. Representative Mahoney, you had a comment?
Just a question. Does this, with the cities and the counties that have smoking bans in effect now, and their bars have gone in with their smoking bans, those bars would get the 2.5%?
Yes, they would, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you.
Are there other comments or questions, concerns? Representative Canoe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure exactly how to change this amendment in terms of delaying it, and I think there are some arguments for delaying it in terms of businesses. And I just, looking at the December 31st, 2008, I just happened to live in another country with a very similar climate that enacted a smoking ban while I was there. Well, actually not while I was there. It was supposed to come in January 1st, the year I was there. And I was in Norway, and they said, well, if you go outside, it's really cold here, and we're sending people outside, there's going to be a lot of people upset about that. And so they delayed it until June of the same year, right after I left. So I just want to, for the record, say that thinking about if we do go the route of delaying it, it's important to think of some things, even like climate, that we might not necessarily think of right off the top of our head.
Actually, Representative Knuth, on a day like today, it should have been on the top of my mind. That is a point very well taken. I would trust that the authors would carry that thought forward with them as this bill continues to, if the amendment even goes on, and it's something that I'd certainly take in high regard as well. If there's a better date, the point was really more of a generalization about we do need to give. These are small businesses that need a little bit of time to adapt and hopefully some incentive and some ability to help them adapt. Representative Ansel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Goes without saying I have great respect for both of you for bringing this forward. However, Representative Severson, could I have a little clarity about the exchange that occurred about 3 or 4 minutes ago about your opinion as to what happens to the sale price in the event that a current owner is attempting to sell an establishment and the climate is such that a ban is either in place or is coming? Do you think the price is inflated or deflated? Or I didn't quite get that, and all I'm asking for is some clarity.
And Representative Ansel, he said he'd buy them all. Did he? No, Representative Severson, perhaps you can clarify.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that issue, I think if there is someone that is going to make an investment, they want to make sure that that machine is running at 100% before they assume the liability for that. So when we say there is a bill coming that has the potential of creating doom on the horizon or at least a drop in somewhat revenue, they're going to be reluctant to jump in. That's why I say if we push this off for 2 years, then or a year and a half or however long, people are going to wait until that event takes place. They're going to see how the business does after that, and then they'll make an offer. So we're really just delaying the inevitable. If we can pass the smoking ban, I think implementing it right now and then having the people who own the bars, you know, if there's a tax provision that goes on or if not, I firmly believe that most of these places are social gathering places. People go there because they want fellowship. They don't go there because they want to smoke. They're not going to stop going there because their buddy is there and that's where they want to go to gather. And so I think we're going to ride through this thing, and they may see a small dip momentarily, but I fully believe that as you get through the other side that people, you're going to gather more people because there are a lot of people who don't go to these places because it triggers their asthma. It's health issues. It's a lot of those things.
Representative Ansel, does that satisfy? Are there other questions or comments with regard to the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the amendment, say aye.
No.
All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
The motion carries. Are there other amendments that people intend to offer? I know that there have been a variety. Representative Huntley and Severson, there were a number of them that were offered in various places. We had a chance to hear and see some of those as it was on the internet and TV and some of that, but I'm not aware of any other amendments that are being proposed here. Are there other comments or questions with respect to the bill itself? In light of that, by the way, I would amend my original motion, which was recommended to pass House File, is it 305, gentlemen? And we refer it to the Committee on Finance, because obviously it would have a financial component. Is there any further discussion? Representative Mahoney?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, it's good that I had to sit here for an hour or two after walking in, because I had to settle down. I've been here for 8 years now. I fought through kid credits. I fought through health care cuts to low-income wage earners. I fought through education cuts to the places where their kids go to school. I fought through the fight on TANF, workforce training. And you know, I never saw as many degreed people coming to talk about these people. I find this room so full of disingenuous people. I'm saddened. And I soften that word from what I really feel. Because, you know, I never heard a peep about poor people, about low-wage workers, or workers' safety, until it served another purpose. But I guess we all have our faults.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Is there anyone else who desires to be heard with respect to House File 305? Representative
Chairman and members, this even before your amendments, this bill does have a fiscal note for a number of departments, and so it does need to go to finance.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Huntley. I appreciate that comment as well. Is there additional comments or questions? Seeing none, Chair renews his motion that House File 305 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. Any other comments, questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Representative Huntley and Severson, thank you very much for your time today. Thank you for everyone's comments today. Everybody drive safely. If you need a ride home, I got a four-wheel drive, so see me later. But with that, folks, our next meeting will be set for Tuesday. You'll get agendas. We'll be back in the old room, and with that, we stand adjourned. Thank you all very much.